Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
The first anniversary of the election of the Turnbull government. Even at the end of the last session of Parliament, just a week or so ago, as they were trying to celebrate their triumph in getting the Gonski funding through the Senate, there was yet more disruption, not just externally, but internally. Now, the last few days have certainly seen that ramping up, with a very significant speech by Tony Abbott at a Liberal Party reform seminar that was being held in Sydney. Some of the issues around reform for the Liberal Party relate to pre-selections and those kinds of issues, but Tony Abbott used the occasion to be very, very plain, and for anyone who was there to listen, and that was, you know, pretty much everyone with an ear heard it, he was really trying to indicate his intention to continue to disrupt the leadership of Malcolm Turnbull until some kind of result would be received. Malcolm Turnbull, for his part, on his first anniversary, has warned against those people who would be wreckers. Now, he didn't name Tony Abbott, but you might remember when Tony Abbott left the prime ministership, he specifically promised he wouldn't be a wrecker. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has called for people to be builders and not wreckers. And the instability in politics in Australia today must be of concern to all people of goodwill, I would think. I thought to get a handle on it, we would turn to Bruce Baird. Now, Bruce, you might remember, was the Deputy Liberal Leader in the New South Wales Parliament. He was a senior backbencher, a senior figure in the Howard government years, not promoted by John Howard. Why? Because he was from the moderate faction. Bruce was the Vice President of the Liberal Party federally, a member of the federal executive for 3 years until he stepped down until his term ended just a week or two ago. And Bruce Baird, of course, is a Christian and well-known to this program. Bruce Baird, welcome back to Open House.
Stephen, it's lovely to talk to you.
Thank you. How did you interpret Tony Abbott's speech to the Reform Conference this weekend?
I thought it was very provocative. And, you know, I think the problem is that Tony should have left the Parliament when he was no longer Prime Minister. He seems to thinks this is the way that he can get back. And I don't think we've seen Kevin Rudd, who was disruptive for Julia Gillard, but it was a bit more subtle than this. This is up front, out there, bang, bang. He knows how to play the opposition leader, and he's kind of like playing opposition leader within the party. And I think that's pretty unhelpful for the Liberal Party, that's for sure. He's a bright guy and he's got a lot to offer, and it's a pity he just didn't move on with his career. Having been Prime Minister and had a big win, he was very hurt by that. And it's playing out this way in terms of constant sniping. But as I understand it, you know, his support within the party is relatively small these days, so the chances of him coming back are pretty low.
If his support is small, then they're certainly making a big noise, and you'd have to say that the tension amongst the Conservatives has got to a point that we haven't seen for a very long time. That is, one of them actually fracturing off and forming his own party.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think there is that danger because Corey Bernardi has set up the Conservatives group and he's got other people coming from Family First and so on into the party. So it's not beyond possibility that, if he makes no progress and it doesn't look like he's going to get a prime ministership back, then he may well decide to join the Conservatives only. I mean, this is only my theory. And be their leader, and they might do quite well for those who are disillusioned with the Liberal Party.
So, sorry, you were saying that you would imagine, you could imagine a day when Tony Abbott would leave the Liberal Party to join and lead Corey Bernardi's Conservatives?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I think is a possibility. But maybe not. Maybe he just thinks he will stay with inside the Liberal Party and at one point he'll become leader again. But I don't think that's going to happen, so I'm just taking it through to its conclusion of where that might end.
Well, some people have said, in fact, Peter Credlin was one in the last week. She said, look, he's a career politician. He wants to continue to serve his country. He can't imagine himself doing anything else. They, she said on Sky News during the week, they, whoever they are, have got millionaires and billionaires to throw job opportunities at him. Is that true? Do you know anything about that?
No, I think that's not right. I know that there was quite a bit of testing about what he could be offered, but he seems to, because he hasn't had a background business, but rather a journalist, then it's kind of more of a narrow field he could go into. Normally, the traditional one is you go into boards and that after being in politics if you've got the background. But, you could keep on being. I would see him running his own television show and that he'd been quite good at it. Because he's very good at writing op-eds and he's a smart guy.
So when you say there's been some testing, are you aware that people have sounded him out?
There was kind of talk that there had been some review of what type of job could be found and so on. So, I think that was more informally. It wasn't any major exercise.
But was that talk amongst the leadership group of the party?
No, just friends and supporters.
Well, Bruce, you've been on the National Executive. It's only just in the last week, I think, that you've stepped down from that position.
That's right. Yeah, I was Vice President for 3 years of the party.
So how concerned should the party leadership, the rank-and-file leadership, the executive, if you like, how concerned should they be? What should they be saying to the parliamentary party?
Well, I think, they are concerned because at where we sit at the moment in terms of the opinion polls, we are going to lose the next election unless things turn around. Now, the good news is that we've still got quite a way to go until the next election, but it's now less than, it's 2 years. So that, things can turn around. Malcolm is certainly starting to learn how to manage the Senate and get legislation through, and the Gonski too was a good example of some successful politicking, but of course the attention was taken away because of the Pine comments and then Tony's various speeches during the week, which then they talked about, reflected on the internal Liberal Party politics. So, it is a challenging time in terms of the Liberal Party and highlights the divisions within.
Something we haven't seen of this nature for quite some time. Well, you'd be a factional ally or your fellow moderate with Christopher Pine.
Yes.
His comments were pretty unhelpful, weren't they?
Well, they were true. I mean, I was invited to the same party, so I can't... but I didn't go, you'd be pleased to know. I'm very glad I wasn't.
Yes.
But, it was unwise comments, we could say, at least, because it was embarrassing for Malcolm. It exposed internal tensions and there was a certain sense of triumphalism. But nevertheless, I feel some degree of sympathy for Christopher because he was thought that he was saying this within a sympathetic audience. And obviously that somebody has come in and recorded it to embarrass him.
Well, someone had said that his comments were so loud they could be heard outside of the room. But anyway, just goes to show that there's never any such thing as off the record.
Yeah. There's a few people who are invited that, would belong to another group.
That was probably not wise. Is there a triumphal attitude amongst the left? Do they need to pull their head in?
No, not that I'm aware of. It's true that, as Christopher outlined, that we have a number of people who we regard as moderates, as leaders. Now, that's Christopher himself and people like Julie Bishop and George Brandis, Simon Birmingham, Maurice Payne are all seen as being part of the moderate stream. And but nevertheless, we've got some significant players who are not seen as part of the moderate camp, like Scott Morrison and Matthias Cormann and Peter Dutton, etc. So, and it is always regarded as a broad church. And John Howard used to quote of bringing the two sides of politics together.
Yes,
that's the. There's a successful way because you've got the strands of the progressive liberals, let's call them, on social issues and yet conservative on fiscal issues, and then you've got the people who are conservative on both fiscal and social issues. So bringing those streams together is always a challenge.
Well, some of those social issues are really very fractious, though. And Christopher Pyne hit it right on the hot button when he pressed the same-sex marriage issue. Is there, as he said, a push to have that matter dealt with by the Parliament as soon as the next session?
Well, I mean, there always is, because, you know, there's a lot of support for that in the community. I think the last polling was 62% or something support. And the Labor Party, don't muck around with it, said that they'll be legislated within the first 100 days. I mean, I did get frustrated in terms of the Australian Christian Lobby, for example, on this issue. That on the weekend distributed 20,000 leaflets against Christopher Pyne, what he said, which would with the objective of damaging Christopher and the seat, and if the government changes, they'll get it automatically anyway. So I'm not quite sure the political logic of that. Apart from sending, from my point of view, a wrong message in terms of, you know, is the Christian church there in terms of just condemning others? Or is it about, you know, love, acceptance and forgiveness, which is certainly the themes of the prodigal son or the woman caught in adultery or whatever, and not that anybody was doing anything significant. It was only a speech by Christopher, and it unleashed this tirade of abuse. But
it does show, doesn't it, what a difficult issue that is, because you'll find plenty of other Christians who would agree with you, for instance, as a Christian, who will have a quite different view about the way they would vote were they in the Parliament on the question of marriage. That biblical marriage, in their view, is between a man and a woman.
Well, it's true. We're having it at our church this very morning. But I think it's also the ability to respect others' views. And, my problem is when you've got such a strong reaction as we've seen from the Australian Christian Lobby. And I just wish they'd get involved in other social issues as well. Who are they in terms of asylum seeker issue and the people on Manus Island, Nauru? Where are they in terms of domestic abuse, of homelessness, etc.? And I just think that, you know, to focus as Christians on two issues, which is the gay marriage and abortion, is for a lot of people, it's very off-putting in terms of the general community, and I hear people's comments about it. And it's a bit unfortunate, you know, because I think that the Christian message is one of love and acceptance.
Mm. So if you, as you've imagined, there is a continuing drift of some people to a Conservative Party, to Corey Bernardi's Conservative Party indeed, do you imagine that that becomes a new home for Conservative Christian voters?
Oh, it's quite possible. I mean, you know, if you look at the outcome of the US elections, then the Trump got there by a very significant evangelical Christian vote. It was said to be 70% of the evangelicals voted for Trump.
Mm.
So that is a significant area, and it may well be that there is a flight to that party. But, you know, I still believe that things will get back on track in the Liberal Party, and issues like the gay marriage one will go back to where it was previously announced would be the policy, which is a plebiscite. The problem is with the plebiscite is the Labor Party are intent on torpedoing that along with the Greens.
Mm.
They said, well, we don't want debate going on, which is, I think, an excuse of why they just want to embarrass the Liberals and say, you know, bringing over the progressive voters, we'll call it, over to their side. So it's being used by both sides. Politically.
Oh, absolutely, and we can see why, because it actually will produce a result for the Labor Party if it continues down the track it is at the moment. That is politically. It may well, as we both just agreed, split the coalition. Look, Bruce Baird, on this program, we are very fond of saying, as we look at life through the lens of faith, where do we find hope? So Australian voters might be saying, gosh, we thought we'd finally elected a government that was going to be able to bring us some stability, albeit it was a very close election. But yet here we are again, and it's just another example of this flip-flop. If the parties themselves can't agree, how can we? Where do you go to, as a Christian and as a former MP and as a practicing political insider, where do you go to find hope in this situation?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't have a problem in terms of a Christian who is also a moderate politically, and it's all quite comfortably with me.
Yes.
Where do I find hope? I find hope in a lot of terrific people who are down in Canberra. I know a lot of these people, and they're excellent people with great qualities and so on. And but there is, you put a group of people together and different groups emerge and factions can emerge within that, and that's not just in political parties. So I just think that in terms of the last budget, for example, I thought that was, there was some lot of good stuff, the Gonski 2 and the National Disability Scheme.
Yes, both marvellous.
Were all, you know, to be applauded.
Yes.
And there was a lot of legislation gone through. It's difficult. I mean, I think that needs to be some reforms in the Senate, to my view, because it makes government more difficult. I mean, it made it very difficult for both Julia Gillard and Kevin Rudd.
Yes.
So the instability that occurred under their watches as well was some of the same product. The Australians are expressing their disillusion in politics as they are worldwide, as we've seen in the election of Macron and Brexit and Trump.
Yes, it's the times we're in, perhaps.
That's right. You can't take people for granted. And a lot of people feel left out.
Well, they're not easy to lead in those times. This weekend, Malcolm Turnbull has written that if he loses the election, he'll leave politics. Is there a sense for you that he's become a bit despondent?
Well, I suppose if you put yourself in his position, if you kind of get poll after poll which shows you're running behind, you get attacked by, every day there is a negative article about it, then, that's why I'm sure he's saying, well, if I get knocked back as leader, I'll be out of here. I won't be hanging around. But I think there was also a bit of a message in that with Tony, why don't you do the same type of deal? So
I don't think there's any doubt about the message he was sending.
Yeah, that's right. It is an interesting period of time that we're in. The traditional voting pattern, as was seen in the US and France and Britain, is just gone. I mean, the results of the election in Britain, where the Conservatives almost lost, with having been returned with a significant majority, and Macron didn't come from either of the major political parties, the Socialists and the Conservatives, that had been in power for decades, and suddenly they said, "No, we want a new way, a new style of government that's more in touch with the people."
Yes, I do wonder whether we're in for one of those big corrections ourselves. Well, Bruce Baird, people will know that your son Mike left the Premiership of New South Wales some months ago now, and one of the reasons he gave for that was family reasons. You've just had the wedding of Mike's daughter this weekend. Yeah. How did that go?
Well, it was all a great celebration. I mean, two wonderful young people, both keen Christians, who got married. It was a very Christian service we had yesterday at St. Matthew's Manly. And there was a sense of joy and love and celebration in the air, and I think Michael was very glad to be there and to be able to get some time to all be part of it. I think it's enjoyed his time in politics, but enjoying the new era of his life.
Well, many, many people, including Georgina and I, continue to pray for your family. So, Bruce Baird, thank you for joining us tonight.
Nice to talk to you, Stephen.
Yeah, Bruce Baird, senior Liberal, and until his term ended just a couple of weeks ago, vice president of the party federally, member of the federal executive, which is concerned, needs to be concerned, the executive, about what's happening within the parliamentary party. And some pretty stiff words there. If you heard Bruce Baird clearly, he thinks that Tony Abbott ought to look for a media career. He also suggests, although he said he had no evidence for it, that there's a scenario in which Tony Abbott might join the Conservative Party set up by Corey Bernardi. And if that happened, and this is, for me, quite a fascinating turn of events, would a number of Christian voters, a substantial number of Conservative Christian voters, follow him and Corey Bernardi to a Conservative Party, specifically because of these hot-button issues around which the Liberal Party just cannot seem to get any clear air, one of those being gay marriage. Now, you will have heard Bruce Baird being critical in that interview of the Australian Christian Lobby. And we've got Lyle Shelton joining us on the line. Lyle Shelton is Managing Director of the ACL. Good evening, Lyle.
Yeah, good evening, Stephen.
No, I'm sorry, I dragged you in from jogging, but it is minus 8 in Canberra, isn't it?
Not quite. It's probably hovering around about zero. It was pretty fresh out there tonight.
It was minus 8 earlier today, apparently, which is not good. Well, look, Lyle Shelton, you've heard what Bruce Baird had to say. Did you distribute 20,000 leaflets in Christopher Pyne's electorate this weekend?
Well, probably the good bulk of that, yes. Most would have gone out yesterday and today, and there'll be more going out over the course of this week. It was something we decided to do during the week in response to Christopher Pyne's comments at that Liberal Party meeting, or that dinner or drink session at the bar at the Star City Casino about a week ago, where it wasn't just unwise comments, it was actually comments to a critical mass of Liberal Party parliamentarians and party members, saying that he was wanting to undermine the government's election promise. Now, that's a very serious thing for a senior member of the government, someone in Malcolm Turnbull's leadership team, to really have such contempt for an election promise. And I think it goes to everything that's wrong with our political system, whether it's on the left or the right of politics. Politicians, just too many of them, are too willing to throw their promises and their voters under the bus, metaphorically. And I think that was really disappointing. So we wanted to send a bit of a message. We live in a participatory democracy, and grassroots activism, I think, is something that's important as we participate in the democracy. So we want people to be aware of Christopher Pyne's comments, and for him to feel a little bit of heat in his own electorate. It's accountability.
Indeed. 1-300-40-2020 if you'd like to join us on Open House tonight to discuss the state of politics. As I say, we've avoided the leadership question for a while. I think it's time we talked about it tonight. 1-300-40-2020. Well, Lyle Shelton, you heard Bruce Baird say that by doing that, if you ended up unseating Christopher Pyne, making it harder for the government to win, the parliament's on a knife edge, if you got the Labor Party elected through your efforts as a Christian lobby, then it would be a Pyrrhic victory because, of course, the Labor Party is in favour of same-sex marriage.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think what we're doing would cause that to happen, or if it did happen, it would probably be some sort of an independent who supported retaining the definition of marriage, and someone who wasn't going to support the so-called Safe Schools program, which Christopher Pyne ushered in as Education Minister. So I don't think we're in danger of doing that, but I think it is important that we send a message to the government and to those in the government who want to walk away from or trash their election promise and bring in a redefinition of marriage in this term of Parliament against that promise, that that there's lots of people who are concerned. And I have to say, Stephen, this was all done within days, and we had no trouble at all getting volunteers ready and willing with about less than 2 days' notice to do this work. And they were on the phone to me yesterday, SMSing me their photographs out there, letterboxing, and they were mad keen to do it.
Now, is that the type of politics that ACL wants to play? I mean, it's a game of brinksmanship. You are throwing down the gauntlet to the current government, effectively warning them. And so it's a very active, as you've just said, it's a very active form of politics. Is that why the ACL was formed?
We've always been involved in activism. We've always run major candidate forums in the lead-up to elections. We've always highlighted the issues. We don't play the man at all. And I was a little bit disappointed because an earlier version of the pamphlet is what made it into the Telegraph newspaper today. And I'd scotched that version to just make sure that we were playing the issue, not the man. A red-handle, blue-handle thing happened with someone's email today, but I have to take responsibility for that.
All right, but telling you, as a former sitting member of Parliament, nothing gets more personal than when a lobby group actually letterboxes against you. That's still pretty personal.
Yeah, look, it is. It's issues-based, though, but you've got a senior member of the government here wanting to trash an election promise. It doesn't get much more serious than that. We live in a participatory democracy. It's designed for our participation, and if citizens have a concern, we have the freedom to organise, to distribute educative material, whether it's online or, in this case, we decided to do some printed material. We're always making people aware of where parliamentarians stand on a range of issues online. In this case, we decided to do it with printed material.
Indeed. Well, now, 1300 40 2020 to speak about these issues tonight if you'd like to have your say. Lyle, in that interview you heard Bruce Baird and I discussing the possibility that the Conservatives would indeed, which already established, Corey Bernardi's party, or would they would effectively take a lot of Christian Conservative voters away from the Liberal Party. And it seems to me that's a very real prospect. Are we seeing something akin to the split in the Labor Party in the 1950s starting to unroll before our eyes?
Look, I think it's too early to say, but anecdotally, as I travel around the country and talk to people, I'm hearing a lot of grassroots Christians and a lot of people who are former members of the Liberal Party say that they are signing up to Corey Bernardi's email, that they have paid their $25, and they seem quite energised. Now, I can't quantify that, but I think it is a real danger for the Liberal Party, and particularly I think Christopher Pyne's comments highlight that danger. I think people are expecting, they're tired of politicians who say one thing and do another and treat voters with contempt, regardless of where you might stand on an issue like marriage.
Very interesting. Well, I should give you the opportunity then to discuss a couple of the other issues that Bruce Baird raised in relation to the ACL. He said the Christian Church, really. Why is it always heard to be condemning rather than reaching out in love on this question of gay marriage in particular? What would you like to say about that?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity to respond. I'm not sure what he means by condemning. I hope I've never said anything in the public square that condemns any person. That's not my heart or spirit or where I'm coming from. Obviously, I wish the gay marriage debate would go away. I'm tired of it. I've been involved in it for about 10 years now, and it's been a pretty hot issue for about 7 years since Adam Bandt got up in the Parliament and really reignited the issue at the end of 2010. And it's been driven by other people. It's not driven by Australian Christian Lobby, but we took a view that we need to meet the challenge of this because it's a social justice issue for children. I think you could withdraw and say nothing if you believe there were no consequences to changing the definition of marriage and no consequences to many of the other things that fly under the flag of the political agenda of the same-sex or the gay lobby, if I can put it that way. Mm. If you change the definition of marriage, you are changing our cultural understanding of parenting. You're putting in cultural cement the idea that it's okay for children to be severed from their biological mother and father, not because of tragedy or desertion, which happens now regrettably, and I think we all agree that's something we'd like to address in our society. That's another issue, but we're talking about creating a family construct where some children have to miss out on their biological mother and father, not because of tragedy or desertion, but because two people of the same sex want to have a family. And you've only got to look at Tim Wilson's last report as Human Rights Commissioner, where it was canvassed that we should explore lifting the prohibition legislation on commercial surrogacy, so that two gay married men, should gay marriage ever come in, should be allowed to access babies. Now, that's deeply unethical, and I'm surprised that a human rights commissioner would even canvass that, allow that to be canvassed in a report that he oversaw.
And yet, he, of all people, has actually been the one suggesting that a change to the law that allowed same-sex marriage, but which made very strong protections for religious freedom, so we don't get the bake the cake nonsense that we had in the United States.
No, that's not actually right, Stephen. I know Tim well, and I have great respect and regard for him.
Well, I've spoken to Tim about this on several occasions.
Yeah,
that is what he's saying, isn't it?
No, not in regard to freedom of conscience for Christian businesses. He does not agree with that at all. He would allow some limited freedoms for ministers of religion and marriage celebrants, but certainly not for business owners.
And, well, it sounds like we need to get Tim on next to talk to that. But
yeah,
all right, well, let's.
But also, he certainly wouldn't. As far as I can tell, wouldn't canvass having protections for children to be allowed to know the love of their mother and father.
Yeah, that may well be the case. But of course, as you've said yourself, we are fallen people, and that's the Christian message through and through. And you can't say that every family, maybe any family, is absolutely ideal.
No, absolutely. That's right, Stephen. And it's not the gay lobby that's destroyed marriage. It's the heterosexual community,
yeah.
Particularly since the 1950s and 60s. But we are at a juncture where there's a big public policy debate about a further redefinition of marriage, and it has consequences. And we need to be allowed to discuss those consequences without being called bigots or haters or told that it's a low order issue. It's not a low order issue. It affects social justice for children. It will affect freedom of speech. It will affect Christian schools. It will affect everyone who wants to dissent to the idea that that marriage isn't exclusively between one man and one woman. And of course, it carries with it then these programs like Safe Schools, where children are taught that their gender is fluid. And of course, this is something which Christopher Pyne ushered in as the education minister in the Abbott government. And
it was already there, and he continued to support it. But
it was
during his time, before he left, his office was already winding back on it. So may be just a little unfair.
Background to that, it was launched by Bill Shorten when he was Education Minister in the caretaker period. Now, that's very strange.
Yes, that is strange.
New programs are not launched then.
No.
And then Christopher Pyne protected it. I went and personally saw Scott Ryan, the Assistant Education Minister, on a number of occasions. And I don't think Scott would mind me saying that he was appalled with some of the material that we took to him from the program or promoted by the program, but he was powerless to do it. And I think it's a matter of public record that Christopher Pyne, the so-called moderate, was protecting this program, which encourages children towards puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and
that's
irreversible
right.
surgery with or without parental consent. Now, if this is what the moderate wing of the Liberal Party, which Christopher Pyne is a part of and which Bruce Baird says he's a part of, I'm very concerned about. I don't think that's moderate at all. And Christopher protected this, and was only wound back after groups like ACL and others had our briefs read out in the party room. And the Prime Minister was appalled when he heard about penis tucking and binding of girls' breasts, that he ordered a...
No, there's no doubt. It was an absolutely appalling appalling program. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I can certainly corroborate from my own information. Christopher Pyne initially was advised not to support this program that he'd inherited from the outgoing Labor Party, and he didn't take the advice and later regarded that as a big mistake, just like he's done, by the way, with this marriage thing and the apology. So there it is.
I haven't heard him say that he regards Safe Schools as a mistake. I mean, I hope I'm wrong there.
No, that was my inside information that he later regarded, and then they were going to defund it. They were going to quietly defund it, but then, of course, he was moved in his portfolio. But now we're really talking like insiders, Lyle, and we must avoid that. Look, one last question for you then. Bruce Baird did say, why doesn't the ACL raise issues like asylum seekers and domestic abuse and homelessness?
We do. and I don't know how closely Bruce follows our work, but 20,000 of our supporters signed a petition calling on the government to increase the refugee intake. I personally went and saw Scott Morrison. He flatly refused. We raised this petition, and the next thing Tony Abbott announced, 12,000 extra Syrian refugees. Now, that's not just because of ACL alone, but we helped create an environment where they went from no, we're not going to allow any more asylum seekers in, to allowing extra 12,000 Syrian refugees. We're very active in terms of domestic violence. One of the big drivers of that is the sexualisation of women and girls. We've just run a big conference in Queensland on that. I've been active in the Indigenous recognition issue, which I heard you talking about earlier. I've written a chapter for a book published by Melbourne University Press calling on for recognition of Indigenous people. I just don't know whether Bruce is following our work. Yes, the marriage issue is very dominant. I recognise that. But others are driving that debate, and we've chosen to engage, not to stay silent.
Well, Lyle Sheldon, thank you very much for joining us on Open House. It was good having you.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Cheers. Lyle Sheldon, the Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby.